Blog Talk Radio.
The irony is that most of the stores that were destroyed during the riots were owned by black people.
That's stupid, though. I mean, why trash your own neighborhood?
Well, that's my point. It's an irrational act. It's like an expression of rage by people who feel neglected and turned away by the system.
Exactly. I mean, it's like we had in Watts or the riots in Chicago in 68.
That's crap. I don't buy that for a minute. Calling a riot an irrational expression of rage, that's such a cop-out. It's opportunism at its worst. It's a bunch of people grabbing any excuse they can find to go and loot a store. Nothing more. You know, the fact that these people ripped off the stores in their own communities, all that reflects is the degree to which these people have absolutely no respect for the law at all, and certainly no concept of, like, community or civic responsibility.
Wait a minute. White people commit crimes against white people, too.
Yeah, but they're not offing each other in record numbers all over America. Look at the statistics, for Christ's sakes. One in every three black males is in some phase of the correctional system.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we are late, obviously. Problems with our tech. It is what it is. I'm not sure if the we're about 10 minutes into the broadcast already, Captain. Folks, welcome to a late edition, and I do mean late edition of the Midweek in Review program of Afro-Nerd Radio. You know what? Let's just dive on in. First up, folks. With a heavy heart and bated breath, I would like to inform our audience that the late, great jazz artist Dave Brubeck has left the building almost a few days shy of, I believe, 92 years of age. So what I'm going to do, again, I'm not sure if the intro went forward. We already always have a pre-programmed intro. So I'm going to play a little bit of Take Five, which is probably one of his most famous grooves, most famous compositions.
I believe it was before his 92nd birthday.
Yeah, before his 92nd birthday. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play his quintessential jam. And there's a story behind this jam and my name. So, folks, our apologies. We're starting a little bit late. Nevertheless, I want to give my kudos and our homage to Dave Brubeck. This is Take Five. We'll be back in a few moments. Hold on, folks.
Thank you.
First of all, with Mr. Brubeck.
You had yourself muted, so you need to repeat that after you cut yourself. After you cut the record.
Did any of that come out?
No. Start from the top.
All right. As I was saying in a muted tone, folks, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the late edition, the late edition. Please accept our apologies for the late broadcast, but everything just went kablooey, and it happens on occasion. So, you know, you're dealing with technology. These things do happen. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. The sounds that you just heard were from the Dave Brubeck Quartet, and Mr. Brubeck is no longer in the building. He passed one day shy from making his 92nd birthday. And I have a personal connection somewhat to Dave Brubeck in the sense that the Oracle, the tangential producer of this program, my father, he named me after the saxophonist and also the writer of this of that jam, Paul Desmond. Paul Desmond is the saxophonist for the Dave Brubeck Quartet. And being that the Oracle is a jazz buff, big jazz buff, as am I. I'm a big jazz guy as well. I was raised on jazz, especially jazz rock fusion. I was always proud that I had a story behind my name, that my name just didn't come out of nowhere. And then, again, it came from Paul Desmond's surname. Desmond is my first name, so it comes from jazz and comes from that tradition. So I was always very proud of that. But that particular jam, Take Five, big, big, big crossover hit. And it's played all the time. It's a jazz standard. I actually have a number of jazz standards that Dave Brubeck pinned, Dave Brubeck or Mr. Desmond. But I was always proud of the fact that I did, that my father was a jazz guy, that I had some kind of connection to, you know, being able to explain my name. You know, I'm always, and I say it somewhat jokingly, the captain knows about this, I really have a problem with some of the names that we've given some of our young people. And this goes really cross-racially. I emphasize black folk especially, but it's cross-racially with people just naming folks anything. There's no connection. There's no story. Or the story is a wacky one. So, again, long story short, Mr. Brubeck is no longer with us, and he is to be applauded for his talent, classical training, heavy improvisational skills. He's also known for songs like In Your Own Sweet Way, The Duke, as well as Take Five, which was from this big-selling album called, what was the name of that song? Just Time Out, 1959's Time Out. And that song still holds up. Song's like over almost 50 years old. Still sounds like a new acid jazz groove, timeless. That's what it means. You make quality music, folks. Music just doesn't go out. Just doesn't go anywhere. It's not, ringtone music. So anyway, on with the show. We have a lot to discuss with limited time. First, I wanted to actually pick up on something that we failed to address last week, and this is with Angus T. Jones. Angus T. Jones, young actor from Two and a Half Men. This is about a week and a half ago. And he had a meltdown. And it's an interesting meltdown because essentially he is, from my understanding, he is a born-again Christian. And he was on video with a young man of color, well, older than him, but I guess between 30 and 40, maybe late 20s, 30s. You know, I can't tell age on folks anyway nowadays. But anyway, he was saying all kinds of things about Two and a Half Men, saying that it's a, you know, the show was just no good. I would implore my audience, I'm talking about Jones's audience. Jones was saying in the video, please, please stop looking at my show. Stop tuning in. It's about the devil. You know, so many folks said, well, 2.5 Men is not the worst of it. And also, you get paid millions to appear on the show. Are you going to give away your money? Are you going to give back your money? So someone I would assume, pulled them to the side and say, hey, listen, you're going to have to straighten this out. But I suspect, Captain, that his days are numbered. I'm going to try to find this clip, if I can, of Angus's implosion, because it's an interesting one. And it's actually one part of the clip that I didn't get a chance to record. But he is with this man of color, and he goes on and says that how much he likes black people. He said, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I like black people. And, you know, that's okay. That's okay,
like,
I guess.
Like we're a pet.
I wouldn't quite put it that way. I don't think he was. I think in his way he was trying to be sincere. I just think my mind was, do not follow these Negroes into the abyss. That was my impression when I looked at it. That he was saying that he had an affinity for black culture. But I don't know why he had to profess that. Because if something goes wrong, are you still going to like black people? It's a double-edged sword. Sometimes it's best. And what kind of black people are you hanging out with? We've seen this before. Anytime I hear people talk about they love black folks, it's usually the minstrel kind. And on top, and why can't it just be I like people? Why, I didn't really get any kind of, I don't think he, I wouldn't say that he was perceiving us as pets, but it just seemed as if he was comfortable, maybe too comfortable, and, you don't cut your nose to spite your face. So anyway, let me go to maybe a couple of clips on Mr. Jones's implosion. Now he's redacted everything and says, I love 2.5 Men. And now, Miley Cyrus might end up becoming a major player on the show. And somehow, just as they phased out Charlie Sheen, Mr. Jones may be phased out too for talking slick. He's only 19 years old. And I said this before, at 19, many young people, they know something. They know a little something. A little knowledge is a very dangerous thing because you know something, but then you think you know everything. And you end up screwing yourself up. All right, this is Angus, his original rant about his work on 2.5 Men. Hold on, folks.
Jake from 2.5 Men means nothing. He is a non-existent character. He's 2.5 Men. If you watch 2.5 Men, please stop watching 2.5 Men. I'm on 2.5 Men. I don't want to be on it. Please stop watching it. Please stop filling your head with filth. Please. It's people say it's just entertainment. The fact that it's entertainment, do some research on the effects of television and your brain, and I promise you, you'll have a decision to make when it comes to the television, and especially with what you watch on the television. It's bad news. It's bad news. So, that's coming. I don't know if it means any more coming from me, but you might not have heard it otherwise. So, just watch out. Watch out, because a lot of people don't like to think about how deceptive the enemy is. He's been doing this for a lot longer than any of us have been around. So, we can't play around. There's no playing around when it comes to eternity. If we're lukewarm, and if we, if we're behaving like the Laodiceans, it's going to cause a lot more harm, because people will see us and
and be like, oh, I can be a Christian and be on a show like Two and a Half Men. You cannot be a true God-fearing person and be on a television show like that.
Yeah, you know, folks, and this is part two. This is the Young Turks interpretation of the Angus Jones meltdown. I'm not going to disparage this young man's religion because, you know, listen, you're allowed to worship however you want to worship. But at the same time, my thing is, Two and a Half Men is very, very low on the totem pole when it comes down to programming that is completely against, you know, morality. You know, the reality shows, the music shows, the minstrel stuff that we talk about, the talk shows, the court shows. I mean, if this kid is going to take a stand, Two and a Half Men should not really have been in that equation, in my estimation. But he's entitled to his opinion. But when I first heard about this rant, so Two and a Half Men is not the problem. Everything else is crazy. But if you're a Christian, you know, if you're especially one of these hardliners, anything that is remotely risque, gets the axe. But the landscape with what's on TV now, Two and a Half Men doesn't even measure up to that. Two and a Half Men doesn't even rate compared to what's on television nowadays. So he's a little off. His character, I've always felt this way as well, that these actors, how great a thespian are you really? I mean, a lot of actors will tell you that, you know, a part of their personality really does play a role in what they do, comedically or dramatically. And he plays a goofy kid. He plays a goofy kid. So he was pretty much to his character in this one. You don't blow millions for nothing. Okay, Young Turks quickly, and then we'll move along. This is Young Turks again on Young Master Angus Jones meltdown. Hold on.
Angus T. Jones earlier was complaining about Two and a Half Men, and on a Christian website, he was seen in a video basically urging people to stop watching Two and a Half Men. He says that it was filth and that it can ruin your life and it screws with your brain, and there are studies behind that. Do your research. Whenever someone says do your research, they haven't done their research and they don't know what they're talking about. But I don't know if he got, you know... a good talking to.
Yeah, okay. So, look, he makes $350,000 an episode. Okay, here's what happened. His agent and everybody else involved, is probably his parents, everybody, got him a good headlock. They're like, listen to me, you son of a bitch. Okay, you're going to shut the fuck up, and you're going to apologize like crazy. In fact, you're not going to do a goddamn thing. Don't worry, we got the PR people to write a letter. You're just going to sign off on it. Because you think Angus wrote this? You think Angus? That knucklehead wrote this?
He's 19. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it was written by his PR company. But it says, I have been the subject of much discussion, speculation, and commentary over the past 24 hours.
Go. It's after the first sentence. Did Angus write this? I have been the subject of much discussion, speculation, and commentary over the past 24 hours.
While I cannot address anything, everything that has been said, or write every misstatement or misunderstanding, there is one thing I want to make clear. Without qualification, I am grateful to and have the highest regard and respect for all of the wonderful people on Two and a Half Men with whom I have worked over the past 10 years and who have become an extension of my family.
Oh, come on. Who says without qualification? Who says that, right?
Not a 19-year-old named Angus.
Yeah, and he looks like, from his statements from yesterday, he looks like he's as much of a knucklehead as the character he plays on TV.
Yeah.
Okay? That kid's just like, let me tell you something. I do declare, without qualification.
All right, he continues to write. I also want all of the crew and cast on our show to know how much I personally care for them and appreciate their support, guidance, and love over the years. I grew up around them and know that the time they spent with me was, in many instances, more than with their own families. I learned life lessons from so many of them and will never forget how much positive impact they have had on my life. What happened to the filth?
Yeah, he's like, don't ever watch the show. It's nothing but filth. And today, without qualification, I do declare that they have been the greatest influence on my life. And I promise that they are the most wonderful people. And you should watch it.
All right, enough of that, folks. I think you get the deal on that one. Again, that was from the Young Turks and their interpretation of the Angus Jones meltdown. Moving right along, I want to do a little bit of cleanup on some things that have been bothering me, or some qualifications I need to do on some things that we discussed previously. One, with this Jovan, what's the young gentleman, captain, who was the football player that killed himself? Belcher, Jovan Belcher from last week. You know, a couple of things. For those who have been living under a rock, this young man, football player, killed himself, well, killed the mother of his child and then himself. And he killed himself in front of his coach after this despicable act in an argument with resulting from an argument with this young lady. He goes to the coach and gives his sayonaras to his teammates and to the coach, and then kills himself, shoots himself in the head in front of his coach. And, you know, there was talk that the players were actually considering wearing his number on their helmets or something. And, you know, they forgot that, okay, killing himself is one thing, which is horrific within itself, but he still murdered someone and left his child an orphan. So you're not going to do that. But even beyond this, for whatever the reason was behind this young man having an argument with his child's mother, whatever the reasoning was behind the argument, now words has been coming out that the night before he kills this young lady, he was gallivanting with another woman. You know, some kind of whorish situation where he's out drinking, picks up another woman, or maybe vaguely knows this woman, and he's sloshing around her and, getting into nature's business with this woman. And, you know, listen, my feeling is this. You can't cast stones. And I know these are young people, folks, but this man is a slime ball. I'm sorry. I like to get the captain in on this one because, you know, I'm assuming that this argument has something to do with this young lady spending time at some Trey Songz concert. But then you find – but, you know, this whole thing about control with this young woman, and there's more attached to this. It's another reason why I'm bringing this up as well. You know, I said in the last broadcast, and shouting out Tokyo Mike, our friend from Tokyo, Japan, he sends an email to me, and he was very I could tell he was very passionate, very agitated with this whole deal of marriage. You know, I might have mentioned something about marriage last week, that these two people were not married, that there really wasn't any glue for this family. I don't know if you can consider it a family in the traditional sense or in the conventional sense when you have the child, the mother, and the father, and there's no connection with anyone. You're in a house, but there's no purpose. So, you know, anyway, you know, this young man kills this woman, but then before that, he's, you know, being a very trashy with another woman, and then going to have an argument and complain about his paramour's whereabouts. How are you going to complain about this other person's whereabouts? You know, what leg do you have to stand on? I know this is a very masculine thing to do. Men do this kind of stuff, but it has become tired. You know, even when you marry someone, you don't own them, but you do have a lot more leeway. You have a lot more leeway, Captain, in making some demands, if I'm using the right word, or making some requests. You have a lot more leeway in making some requests when you put a ring on a woman's finger. And I know this may sound like it's old hat, but it's the way things work. So I thought that it was just crazy that this man's gallivanting from a night of drinking, and then has the gall to make demands on his child's mother when there's no glue, there's no legality, there's no glue between himself and this young lady, and he takes a life anyway. And we have a lot of young people who conduct themselves this way. I have more to add on this. I want the captain to come in on this. Captain, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I would have to say it's a sign of the times. In my opinion, this man here, if he would have married the woman, he may have still had a situation because he himself is the one that was not stable. He's not a stable individual. We have people who walk around all day long, look stable. They might make very stable money. They might have very stable professions. They might have very stable what we call educations, but they're not stable individuals. They're not stable individuals. And that's what essentially led to what he was doing. He's not a stable person. And the fact is that that was not identified because he's playing great. When you're doing well at the given time, people have a tendency, maybe they see things here and there, but they let it pass. The performance drops off on the field, then all of a sudden now the psychologist comes in, this person comes in, this counselor comes in, everyone starts to look at things. But as long as you're playing good, he'll be all right. The behavior does not get identified. And this is something that was probably here for a while. This just didn't happen. This is something that just didn't happen, that unstable behavior. So, you know, that's essentially what we're dealing with. Now, you know, he could have definitely, you know, what we call this is he has the wifey piece, which is not really the wife. And then he was out with a jump off, playing around. And this is what a lot of people like to do at this given time. That's what it is. You know, you're bombarded with this type of information. You see celebrities doing it. You see, you know, the celebrity rappers doing it. You hear it in the music. It's all around you. That's what you go ahead and you go do. You feel that's the indoctrinated normal behavior. That's what you go do for a lot of people. That's what it is right now. But the point is that I'm making is this man right here, emotionally not stable, and that's what led to the end result that we have right here, the suicide and killing of his paramour. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, and now even more so as to why I brought this up is because it's, you know, we put up advertisements on the ghetto-centric blogs, you know, trying to pull in a listenership, and our listenership has grown exponentially, actually. So there's a method to our madness, even though I'm not really a fan of media takeout or gossip or any of these other blogs, but they get an awful lot of attention. They get an awful lot of attention. God forbid that some of these people read the Daily Beast or Wall Street Journal or Huffington Post or any other, or The Roots or The Griot or anything like that. Anyway, I make some pretty bold advertisements and comments on these blogs, and I speak the way that I speak now is the way that I speak in those blogs. So it's an ironic thing that someone will respond to what I might put on these blogs, these websites, and someone responded to our last advertisement for last week's show, and that person said, "I respect you. You know, I know, you know, I listen to your show, I respect you, but I don't necessarily agree with your thoughts on marriage. Like, you know, marriage is just a paper." I mean, they go all into this thing. You know, marriage is just a paper. So when you said it's a sign of the times, Captain, that's what it is. You have young people who are growing up believing that marriage doesn't mean anything. Perhaps this could have happened even if these people were married. But I do still believe that there's less leeway to make demands on someone. Yeah, well, how can I put this? As I said before, you have more credibility in making requests from your mate when you're married. If there's nothing holding these people together, it's not really a family. And I think the marriage, as people are, the marriage is an institution traditionally that seems to work. And the fact that it's funny that gay folks are catching hell for wanting this legitimacy and that legality, and the straight folks will tell them they shouldn't get married. However, it's the straight folks that are making an abomination of out of the marriage, and for it to be perceived as, oh, it's just a piece of paper. We have women coming out like this now. I'm hearing more and more women.
That's the problem.
Coming out. Caller, we see you. We'll get to you in a moment. We have more and more women. You would never think you would see this, but more and more women are riding this train. I think they've just given up. And I can tell you why. But they're also repeating this. It doesn't mean anything. Marriage is no big deal. Da 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 da. You know, money is paper too, Captain.
Yes.
But you bet, you damn well know that money means something. Money just isn't a piece of paper. But it is. You know, technically, realistically, money is money. $1 million in a briefcase, just a bunch of paper. But not really. And it's the same thing with, you know, it just isn't. And I think it's laughable that this person that responded to my comment, responded to the advertisement, was talking about, you know, I don't think this is not a big deal. They didn't have to be married. And people stay losing. More mistakes are made. No family structure. There's nothing tying people together. And then you end up seeing people at each other's throats, and then somebody's got a bullet in the brain. All right, let me go to the call.
Hold on. Just can I say one thing? If we go back in time, if we remember, right here on this show, we had a woman right in the chat room, and she eventually called in, and then she had said to you, what difference does it make whether that she's married or not, as long as their children are from the same father? And I think Sally had an exchange with her in the chat room back and forth, trying to correct her, saying that marriage is a big deal. You see it happen right here.
If it's not such a big deal, then why are you avoiding it then?
There you go.
You know what I mean? You don't know. Right. You don't avoid. You don't listen. The dentist is a big deal because people avoid it.
That's right. You got that right.
And the doctor.
That's right.
Okay. And most things that are big deals, people avoid.
So it is
a big deal. If it's not a big deal, then it would be 50-50, mm-hmm, or more, 60-40. It's a big deal. It's just that we're raising so many people now that just don't, like you said, it's a sign of the times. And I'm going to go to a call to the callers. But I'm seeing more women who are kind of kowtowing to their mates on this, and yet, deep down, they would prefer to say husband. Because I've been around young women who, when they are truly married, they wear that as a badge of honor. They like to say, "That's my husband."
Wifey peace.
But the other ones, they have to come up. They're really shady about their relationship, and they never can come out and say clearly what it is. So, you know what's going on. I've spoken to women, and they give you two or three different euphemisms for their husband, or the person that they're with, because they don't know how to explain it. And then the other ones that will tell you, well, this is not, you know, it's not a big deal. Da, da, da. They don't really feel that way. But they've just given up. All right, let's go to the calls. All right, 201, welcome to Afternerd. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. Again, apologies for the delayed show. What's up? 201.
Hey, D-Bert and Captain, this is Q-Star.
Hey. Hey, Q.
Q, what's up, man?
How you doing? Hey, so I just want to say two quick things. The first thing I want to say is that, God help me, I am just sick and tired of feeling remorse and grief for people who squander their blessings. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. And this guy showed no respect for his daughter. He showed no respect for his wife. He showed no respect for himself. So why should I feel sorry for him? That may be heartless and cruel, but the more that comes out about this guy, I have a hard time feeling bad for him. The second thing I wanted to say was, you know, in terms of marriage, me personally, I've known brothers who have had girlfriends that have three kids with their girlfriends that live together. And I'm like, why not just take the next step? You know, in my life, I decided that I wanted to be married. Having said that, I feel like let's put the marriage thing aside. Let's bring it back to this tragedy. Whether they were married or not, there was a commitment. And that commitment was born through their daughter. So whether they were married or not, I don't care. If you decide to live your life like that, if you don't want to get married, you have kids, that's fine. Forget the marriage. You have a commitment to the child that you brought into this world. And you're supposed to love that child more than you hate yourself or your wifey, or whatever you want to call her. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, real quick, before I let you go, Q, you just said it right on point. You're right, the commitment is to the child. But that's the problem is, yeah, there's a commitment to the child, but, you know, the structure or the house that's built surrounds the family based on marriage as an institution. So when this guy, quote-unquote, knocks up this young lady, he has, you know, many of these ignorant people, you know, he's trying to control this young woman. She's only 22. So you know he's trying to control her. At the same time, he's somewhat, pardon my French, folks, but he's a scumbag. He's rolling around in the middle of the night with other women, and at the same time, he comes home. After she's out all night, he's coming home trying to control her. It's that whole thing. It's a whole mess. It's like, why did you have the child to begin with? What is the purpose of this? See, to me, marriage gives things purpose. It gives it. It literally gives it glue. But if you're not going to marry this woman, and you're making demands on her for some reason, why? She's not your wife. Your wife, you can kind of get into her behind a little bit because she's your wife. But she's just some woman that knocked up you. That is the difference in this case. And, you know, he's a madman ultimately. You know, as you just said, the whole thing is it's mental illness. We don't know what's going on. But I'm seeing too many of these situations. And too many people are comfortable with just scoffing at marriage, saying it's no big deal. I think it has something to do with this. At least it's stability. When there's no glue in these situations, it's unstable. You can tell you can just tell there's nothing there. With three strangers in a house. It is what it is. We have another call. I think I know what this is. Hold on there, Q. Hold on. Okay. I'm pretty sure this is Serge. Sergio.
Yeah, actually, maybe I should talk later because I want to talk about something else. I didn't want to get off the subject. I should call back later. I've seen the movie that everybody's talking about. I've seen Django Unchained.
Okay, you know what?
Okay.
I'm gonna put you on a hold because I know it's a musical break.
Okay.
We'll let you because actually I know Quentin Tarantino was on Howard this morning. So I might want to hear what you have to say about it. Hold on one moment. Hold on.
Okay.
All right, folks. Listen again. You're listening to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. You had a late start. These things happen. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Let's go to a quick musical break, brush some dust off. When we'll get back, I do want to hear briefly about Django. Django is the latest Quentin Tarantino effort. And then we're going to have to get into our assigned topics. Anyway.
Well, I want to say something real quickly.
Yeah.
All right? Traditionally, the commitment is supposed to start between the man and the woman. So the actual, from the man's standpoint, before you have the baby, you're supposed to make the commitment to the woman. So automatically, once the baby comes, the commitment is automatically stronger. That's the way traditionally, from a traditional standpoint, the way it went. Right or wrong? Am I right or wrong there?
Well, listen, you are definitely correct. I mean, Mario Lopez.
There you go. That's all I wanted to say.
Mario Lopez from Saved by the Bell. You know, B or C actor. I think he's with E Television or something. One of those gossip TV shows. He gets married to his woman after having a child for a couple of years. So the child is walking. He's walking down the aisle with his infant or toddler daughter. I mean, you know, he married his woman, but it's becoming custom now where the kids have to come first.
Yep.
That whole sloppiness. You know, the kid's practically 5 or 10. Sometimes you see, you know, you're on your third or fourth child with the same woman, if that's the case, like the call you referenced before.
Yeah.
You know, and now women are just taking shorts now, Captain, where they're just so happy. Marriage is like, okay, well, at least he's having children with just me. The women are just accepting this garbage. And, you know, one thing, I don't want to keep on tooting my own horn or whatever, but it leads to a great deal of self-esteem on my part that the Oracle and the Wedger, my parents, had me 4 years after they were married. And they from day one, I never stopped hearing, your behind was planned. We planned you. You know, maybe that's why people have told me, well, you sound so arrogant on air. Well, you know what? You're kind of an arrogant sounding guy. That's probably why. I'm tired of the quote unquote, pardon my French, because I'm going to go there every once in a while, nigga nonsense.
You were
tired of it. Tired of
it. You are. Catch the plan.
Although it's cross racial. The sloppiness is cross racial. All right, folks. Enough of my soapbox. That's a little bit of a soapbox moment right there.
Okay.
I know you folks dig it anyway. This is Forever in My Life, a Prince remix. When we come back, we'll talk more with noted film critic from Chi-Town, friend of the show, Sergio Mims, on Django. This is the game, Forever in My Life, Prince. We'll be right back.
Oh,
All right, we're back. Once again, you're listening to the best in urban alternative music from Prince, His Royal Badness, Forever in My Life, a remix. And this is Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. And actually, before we went to the break, we were speaking to a friend of the show, Sergio Mims, and he wanted to talk about Django Unchained. I have to admit, I'm curious. I bought the original Django a few months ago, the Sergio Carbucci spaghetti western version of Django, which is a totally different story. Actually, I'm sure Sergio can go into it more deeply, but this is really a Southern trying to be a Western. And I think the original actor from the 66 version of Django makes a guest appearance in this. So, Sergio, tell us more about this film. Is it Inglourious Basterds for Black People? That's what I want to know.
Well, you can. Let me say this. I, without qualification, I love this picture. I love
Uh-oh.
It. I've been waiting to see a movie like this for 35 years. Let me tell you.
Really?
And let me explain what I mean by that. If you're of a generation where you, like me, where you grew up watching Jim Brown and Fred Williamson kicking white guys' asses, going downtown, the old Chicago, in downtown Chicago, we had the Woods, the Roosevelt, the Oriental, the State Lake, the McVickers, all those great old movie theaters that are long gone, and you went there to see Slaughter's Big Ripoff and the Slams, and, you know, you name it, right? I've been waiting for a film like this. This is what it is. It's Slaughter's Big Ripoff and Mandingo and Spaghetti Westerns and Blazing Saddles all rolled into one. It is like a Quentin Tarantino movie. It is deliriously violent. There is a shootout. There's some really cringe-worthy stuff in this picture. There is a shootout in the last 45 minutes of the movie, which goes to it goes beyond the pale and then goes beyond that. But what it is, it's like an homage to blaxploitation and spaghetti westerns. Like as Quentin Tarantino does, he mixes genres together. The use of music, he uses everything from Rick Ross to Ennio Morricone's. You know, I heard, for example, at the very beginning, I heard the theme from Two Mules with Sister Sarah with Clint Eastwood, which was a Morricone score. He uses Verdi's Requiem. He uses, you know, everything, Johnny Cash, anything. And the plot, now, I think younger people will not get this picture or understand what he's doing. As I said, I sent you an email. I think that those of the Star Wars generation may find it offensive, which may be his intention, or probably may be clueless about it. But if you understand the genre of the blaxploitation films and the spaghetti westerns, which were the late 60s into the 70s, mid-70s, if you love that era and you know what those films tried to do, he captures that very well. Jamie Foxx is good. Actually, he's not given a lot to do, if you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
He basically becomes a man on his own. Leonardo DiCaprio is amazing. He is absolutely amazing. He's going to get a nomination for sure as Best Supporting Actor. That's given.
Well, I want to ask you something. Being that Quentin was, Mr. Tarantino was interviewed on Howard this morning on
Sirius. Yeah, I missed it. I wish I heard that, what he said, right.
Well, on SiriusXM, they were lauding Christopher Mintz. Now, is it Christopher Mintz?
Christopher Waltz, yes.
Another actor. Christopher right. Waltz won an Oscar for Inglourious Basterds. Now, does it measure up to Inglourious Basterds? Because Tarantino's known for his dialogue, and the way that Inglourious Basterds, like the tension in Tarantino films and the dialogue. Are we getting any of that in Django?
Yes, absolutely. There are several things in this movie. You know Quentin Tarantino, you know how he works. He will have these long dialogue scenes that build up intention, where you know something is going to happen, right? in the very beginning. You know, when we first see Christopher Waltz's character, Christopher Waltz is good. He's really superb in this film. He plays a completely different character than, of course, the Nazi in Inglourious Basterds. But there's a particular one scene in a dining room with Fox, Qualtz, DiCaprio, and, you know, other members of DiCaprio's family. And I have to also say Samuel L. Jackson, who plays the servant to DiCaprio, and he basically represents the black people who will sell out other black people. He represents the Uncle Tom. He's like the ultimate Uncle Tom in this film, which is basically what he is. Mm-hmm. And also, he's adding to that mix. And that scene goes on for a good, maybe 20 minutes. But it builds, and it builds, and it builds. And like any good Tarantino scene, it builds to a climax, then it comes down, then it builds up to another climax, which then leads to something else that happens in the picture. He's a master of that. And you know the producer of the film, one of the producers, Reggie Hudlin.
Oh, Reggie. Okay, right. Okay.
Right. He wasn't a producer of the film. He's known Tarantino forever. I talked to Reggie called me several times from the set, telling me how things were going. And, you know, he was very, very excited about this picture. And I said, well, let me wait. I'm thinking, well, I got to wait till I see it. Now I've seen it, I see that all his raves are true. I mean, this is, I'm anxious to see how the general audience, I think it will play very well. It will play very well with guys, absolutely. Women won't like this film at all. If you're an absolute blacker than thou person, you're not going to like this picture, because it is a fantasy. It is a revenge fantasy, like Bastards was. Some black people have a problem with that. And let me tell you something. Tarantino does not shy away from the brutalities of slavery in this picture. This is not a pretty film. It's not lighthearted. There are comic moments in the film that have nothing to do with slavery. But he doesn't turn away. And there are some scenes in the film involving the practice of slavery done to black people, which are, you know, pretty hard to watch. He doesn't turn away from that.
He mentioned that on the interview that
right.
You know, this was filmed on a plantation, and that there were scenes that they had to
They mainly shot it in and around Louisiana. They shot some stuff in Wyoming, and then the rest was on sound stages. But yeah, most of it was shot in and around Louisiana.
Well, I guess the question really remains at this point. You know, and Bastards made over $300 million.
Right.
Do you think that this film is going to resonate with people? To make at least a decent profit, because you know with predominant black leads about slavery,
yeah.
Even though it's a Tarantino film,
and right,
you know,
and don't forget,
what do you think it's going to do?
I think it's going to do as well. I really do. I think it's going to do as well. Here's the thing you got to keep in mind: the central story is this black man who's trying to reunite with his wife. His black wife, played by Kerry Washington. That's the main focus of this picture. A guy who will do anything, kill anybody, to get back with the woman he loves. That's the focus of the film. Right? So, you know, he goes through hell. Really, he does. Jamie Foxx goes through hell and high water to finally be reunited with Kerry Washington. What guy wouldn't?
Yeah, I'm about to say
so
that.
So anyway...
Not a stretch.
Right. Not a stretch, right? And so I think that maybe I hope sisters will like it. Hey, here's a brother doing whatever he can to get back with his wife. When's the last time you saw that in a movie?
Yeah. Listen, when is the actual release date on this?
Well, it comes out Christmas Day.
Oh, Christmas Day. Oh, we got a little bit
Christmas
of time
Day.
Then.
It comes out Christmas Day. I saw it, you know, weeks in advance. But, finished the movie last week. They just finished the film last week. I know that for a fact. So today was actually the first day of, like, event screenings, media screenings. and they'll be screening it for other screenings for the rest of the week. I mean, for the rest of the month until opening day.
All right. Listen,
it is a long film. It's 165 minutes, though it didn't feel that long to me.
Yeah.
It, you know, it moved.
Well, let's put it this way. You hyped it up for me. I was going to see it, but I was like, I could wait maybe. Nah, I'm not going to wait. So based on what you told me, not going to wait. There's also a comic book coming out that Tarantino is also talking about, a comic book to complement Django. So it should be pretty interesting.
That's something that Richie Hudlin is doing. He's decided to do a whole comic book chain, comic book series on Django. But I really can't tell you how happy I am when I saw this picture, how relieved I am, because, you know, a lot of people are, how this is going to go. And I know there was an earlier script that went out, that leaked out through the Internet, that people had reservations about. I know he made some major changes. I never read that script. I know he made some major changes in the script. Some women will be angry because Kerry Washington's character doesn't really have a lot to say. I mean, basically, she's brutalized a lot in the film. She's not raped in the film, but she is, you know, roughed up and manhandled. But you know what? That's what happened during slavery to women, you know? That's what happened, you know? You see black women being whipped in the film. Not Kerry. You'll see later Kerry Washington has been whipped in the past, but you don't see it. You see it in the picture. She has been whipped. She gets whipped. That's what happened, folks. That's what happened during slavery. It wasn't Queen. It wasn't Halle Berry falling in love with her white master and they run off together. It wasn't that. It was hard. It was brutal. It was vicious. And this movie shows it.
Well, Serge, again, we appreciate you coming through and giving some info. We're going to definitely check it out. Now I have a lot more interest. I was hyped up about it from before. I think James Brown's Payback is also in there too, right? As far as the soundtrack.
No. That was just for the trailer. That's just for the trailer.
Oh, Jesus. So that was
just for the trailer.
You got it from James Brown. All right.
Yeah, I know.
Sir, as always, we appreciate you coming through. And
but look, I'll see you guys next week, right?
Yeah. We'll be here. Let me know. Send me an email. Call me, and we'll get together and chop it up. And again, man, always we appreciate it. I'm glad you didn't tell me too much, so you told me enough to get me hyped up.
Right. No. There's a lot more I didn't tell you. Okay. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. All right, Captain. We're going to go to a quick transition as far as topics, but what were your thoughts on what Sergio said about Django Unchained?
Yeah, I was going to wait. Now I'm not going to wait. Now I'm in there to go see this. I was actually going to wait, you know. I knew the movie was coming out and everything. We discussed this before back in September. But my plan was to wait, you know, a couple of weeks, if anything, you know, and maybe see it through, you know, nefarious-type means, but, you know. But now I'm somewhat amped up to go see it.
Yeah, he did his job on that one because listen, I'm a Tarantino fan, but I guess that maybe, you know, we saw the trailer like months ago, and I guess my interest was starting to wane. But now, based on what he's saying, you know, because my thought was, you know, when you deal with these directors, sometimes, you know, it's just human nature. Sometimes, you know, the next piece of art isn't always as good. Like Inglourious Basterds, it completely impressed me. I just had it in my back of my mind. Well, it can't be as good as that. So if it's not going to be as good as Inglourious Basterds, quote unquote, the black, you know, which this is going to be the black version of that. I was like, I'll get around to it. Now I'm a lot more intrigued about the film, so I will see it probably around Christmas Day. So I'm involved. I'm into it. All right, transition time. We got about less than 20 minutes remaining. Believe it or not, I want to talk about Bill O'Reilly. I'm no big fan of Bill O'Reilly, Fox News correspondent Bill O'Reilly, but I do respect the fact that on occasion, just as a broken clock will tell the correct time at least twice a day, that when he says certain things, I don't perceive him to be such a sycophant and such a ideologue. I think he models himself as the independent, or if anything, an independent with some conservative leanings. But I don't think that he has come out and said he clearly is a conservative. You know, he'll reference conservative values, conservative beliefs. And listen, I don't like how he conducts his program. That whole Fox shtick of interrupting their guests, it's corny. We've seen SNL do this. We've seen SNL do skits on their correspondents, you know, blocking people, you know, blocking interviews and interrupting. That's a shtick that he does that really, you know, you can see through that. Anyway, last week he got into Psy's behind, PSY, Psy, the South Korean music artist that has a song called Gangnam Style. That's close to, what, a billion views? Close to a billion views on YouTube. So it's an extremely popular song. Now, I know there is a meaning behind Gangnam Style, because Gangnam is a district, a rather upwardly mobile district in Korea that Psy comes from. Even if there's a lost in translation moment with this song, I still think the song is so fluffy, and that it's so representative of what the music scene is nowadays, where we literally are getting music that's just filler, Captain. That doesn't really mean anything. Doesn't mean anything. So they go off. That is Dr. Keith Ablo, who was a guest on Bill O'Reilly's show. So it's Keith Ablo and Bill O'Reilly going in on this Gangnam Style song. And other folks are saying, well, you know, these are out-of-touch older guys. They don't know what they're talking about. Nah, I think this time they were pretty accurate as to what this song is about, that it's almost drug-like. And I would agree with them on that. So I want to go to a clip with Bill O'Reilly and Dr. Keith Ablo discussing Gangnam Style, Style's latest record, and we'll talk about it. We'll chop it up. Hold on, folks.
Joining us now from Boston to explain the madness, psychiatrist Dr. Keith Ablo. All right, so the guy, remember the pony? He's just doing the pony. I mean, you know.
The pony.
That's what he's doing, and he's dumping up and down, and 800 million views of this? What's going on?
Well, look, there will be those who dismiss this as having no meaning, just a good beat and a lot of fun. I won't be one of those dismissing it, because when you approach a billion views on YouTube and surpass Justin Bieber, perhaps you're tapping into something. And I think what this fellow's tapping into is, in fact, this Psy, PSY, is tapping into the fact that people don't want any meaning right now. Music, the most popular music, apparently, is that without intelligible words to some extent that simply conveys you to a distant place beat-wise, doesn't try to convince you of anything, doesn't try to raise your emotions. It just is sort of like a drug, and that seems to be what most people seem to want right now. Not reality, not feeling, not meaning.
All right, so it means nothing. But it's got a nice upbeat to it, and you can do the pony and ride around. I think
the meaning is that it has no meaning. It is the son of Facebook, if you will, the false face that so many people now put on their lives. The lack of insight, if you will, is reflected in this person's popularity.
Last question. I don't see anything wrong with this. You know, if you want to waste your time looking at this, or you like the beat, I don't think anything wrong with that. You might lose a few pounds jumping up and down like a pony. That might help out, you know. So I don't see anything wrong with this. Is there anything wrong with it?
Well, look, is there anything wrong with it? I guess I'd say this. To the extent that you revel in things that don't speak to you, that you use something to transport you away from real thought and deep feeling, yeah, there's something wrong with it.
All right, so if you watch this like 7 times a day, that might not be good. So you watch it once.
It's the same as getting high in miniature.
I don't think
it's a little bit. It's a drug.
Now, once you alter your consciousness with substance, then it's a whole different ballgame. This, I think, is relatively harmless. Unless you're, you know, if you're walking into a job interview like this with dark glasses on, then that's going to hurt.
All right, folks. Now, let me play a minute of the Young Turks essentially clowning this exchange between O'Reilly and Keith Ablo. I don't really agree with the Young Turks' interpretation of this thing. I think that O'Reilly and Ablo, in this instance, some of what they were saying had some credence with you know, listen, the captain just said, use the term sign of the times. You know, we talked about people who don't want to get married. They want to have children, and they don't want to have any commitments, but they want to have kids, and it's okay, and you know, this is my wifey, and all that kind of stuff. And maybe it appears to be a generational thing that you're not taking marriage seriously. Your music sucks, no meaning. When someone like KRS-One, legendary hip hop artist, comes out with a song called "Disaster Kit" in the wake of Hurricane Sandy, and you can't even get any airplay for a song that is dead on and informative about Hurricane Sandy, but you're doing the Gangnam Style thing. There's something going on. You can't just be dismissive about things and talk about, oh, these are just two middle-aged guys. They're not with it. Nah, I think they're with it on this one. Anyway, about a minute and a half of the Young Turks opining about O'Reilly and Ablo. Hold on.
This is one of those great moments when a video comes along and you're like, yes, when you're actually a little thankful for Fox News. Bill O'Reilly and his guest, Dr. Keith Ablo, are going to try to explain Gangnam Style. Yes! This is going to be awesome. Let's watch.
Back in the book segment tonight, South Korean guy who calls himself Psy has put out a video that has been viewed more than 800 million times on the net. That's a record.
Already we're having fun. It's the world's biggest goofball. Psy? Or just maybe Psy. What's wrong with you? But here comes the best part. Apparently, they have trouble understanding what's in the video. Let's watch.
I think what this fellow is tapping into is, in fact, this Psy, P-S-Y, is tapping into the fact that people don't want any meaning right now. Music, the most popular music, apparently, is that without intelligible words, to some extent, that simply conveys you to a distant place, beat-wise, doesn't try to convince you of anything, doesn't try to raise your emotions, it just is sort of like a drug. And that seems to be what most people seem to want right now. Not reality, not feeling, not meaning.
All right, so it means nothing, but it's got a nice upbeat to it, and you can do the pony and ride around. That's it, right?
Yeah, I think the meaning is that it has no meaning. It is the son of Facebook, if you will. The false face that so many people now put on their lives. The lack of insight, if you will.
Where to start? So the guy rides a pony. That's what he's doing, huh? Well, it's without intelligible words. You moron. It's in a different language. It's in Korean. They're like, I don't know, you understand it? I don't understand it. I can't understand. I guess it has no meaning. Oh, Fox News. Oh, you kill me, man. God, how unbelievably stupid are you? I don't know. It's like a drug. That's what it is. It sounds kind of dangerous. But it definitely has no meaning. By the way, it actually does have a meaning. He is satirizing the Gangnam District in South Korea, which is where a lot of rich folks apparently live. And so he's, you know, got the horses, the stables, et cetera, their lifestyle, their clothes, et cetera. Now, that's the message, of course, Fox News wouldn't like, but they didn't even bother to check that out. They're like, can you understand this thing? Sounds like gibberish to me. But.
All right. Enough of that. Captain, any thoughts on this? I mean, you know, there's one of those things of lost in translation. There may be a lost in translation moment here with what he just said. I'll give him that much, that Psy was referencing the Gangnam District that he comes from, but visually, the dance isn't about much. We saw that he performed with Hammer from the American Music Awards about a week ago, and it is a very simple dance. I mean, you know, there's always going to be some song that is very popular and very pop that resonates with a lot of people. In this case, you're talking about resonating with the world. It's almost getting a billion, almost approaching a billion hits. But, it you know, I think that what O'Reilly was referencing, there's some validity to what he's saying. I think they're being a little too dismissive that this music is fast food music. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was fortunate to have someone translate the record for me. So, and they told me he's actually not really saying too much. He is talking about the district. He's not saying anything. And I can remember years ago, there was a producer that I met that eventually called him a big belly guy. He was a big belly guy then. He's probably a bigger belly guy now. He ended up doing some tracks for Jay-Z later on. But at the given time, Hammer was hot. And he said, this is the type of music that the industry calls hot garbage. I said, why do you call it hot garbage? He said, it's a hot record, but it's garbage. It's not saying anything. And those type of records do very well. If you can bring one of these A&Rs a hot garbage, they'll get it right out. They'll do whatever is necessary to get it right out. But it has to be good, hot garbage. And he was making a reference to MC Hammer. So this record right here is considered hot garbage. Hot garbage does have a drug-like effect. It's not saying anything. It doesn't really do anything. But you just get into it, and you lose yourself for a while, and that's all what it is. It's nothing more than that. So this time around, O'Reilly was correct. And that's the same thing that the Korean crowd told me directly. So the record's not really saying anything. Just a fun record you jump up and down. He's just talking about the district. They're familiar with the district. Big deal. We're going to ride with it. And then 6 months from now, we'll be talking about somebody else. Nothing more, nothing less. That's it. There you have it. Seraph on Earth. Did you mute yourself? Okay, I think you muted yourself. All right.
Sorry about that.
Yes.
I don't know. These things, like you said, this kind of music is always going to come out. It's always going to be the Macarena was another one. But I still felt the Macarena was based on a cultural dance. It was something.
No, Macarena was deeper record than this. Deeper record.
I think it was a little something. It didn't irritate me as like this one. This one has resonated with everyone. I mean, it's literally, this doesn't seem to. I mean, come on. Every record doesn't have to have meaning, but some records have to have. Some records have to have meaning, though. You know what I mean? Some do, not everyone. This one's just to approach a billion views on YouTube. So I really can't hate on Bill O'Reilly the way everybody else is. I think is a little bit of that, you're an old man, you're out of touch. And to me, this song isn't really a hip record. It's not hip. It's just popular. Anyway, quickly, it looks like we're going to have to go Sunday with some other things. I do want to talk about, there's a case that's gaining some ground of a mother. Now, this is another. This is madness here also. A mother puts up her child for adoption. Did you hear about this? Without telling her husband?
That's... Whoa. That's serious business right there.
The husband ends up being stationed, I believe, in a different state, but he's with the armed services. The military. Somehow they have difficulties, but maybe I believe they get a divorce in the midst of all this. I mean, they get divorced, but she has a child, and she essentially gives the child up for adoption while he's in the service. And a white family adopts a child from Utah, and he has to wrangle to get the child back although, you know, the mother does it underneath his nose, more or less, or behind his back, I should say. What the hell is going on?
It's crazy.
And he had to fight. Yeah, there was a separation when this child was born. Any thoughts on this? Is this a growing trend? I mean, you know, with women kind of doing what they want to do. I mean, I've been seeing this. I have been seeing variations of this, where the guy wants to be involved in a child's life, but I didn't think it would be possible that one of the two parents can, you know, it's like you go to the store for a moment, and your kid is gone, and you have no control over that. This is wacky.
It's totally crazy. Well, you know, I have to look a little bit more into the legality of that situation. She had the custody. That's essentially how this is breaking up. But doesn't he have to sign off still if you're going to do something like that?
I believe there's like a if it's involving Utah, it's a 30-day, some kind
wow.
of 30-day a 30-day thing where the father would have to sign off. But he had 30 days to do that. But in his case, and this is what actually Utah, there's a growing controversy with Utah specifically, because they can show evidence that they sent it to the father, but if the address is incorrect, because I believe in the case, since this young man was stationed and was moving from different states, again being in the military, his last known he was not at his last known address, so he never received this documentation. But even if, you know, as long as they show proof that it was sent out and the 30 days are up, there's some chicanery in that. But Utah is known for, okay, no response in 30 days, you relinquish your rights. And that's
madness.
Kind of what happened. That's what happened here.
Madness.
All right, you know what, folks? We got about a minute remaining, so we're going to have to pick this up on Sunday again. Unfortunately, we kind of were off our footing because of the show starting late, and that's because of the technical problems with the show. We'll do it again on Sunday for our double duty show. Daryl will be in effect for the comic shop at 6 o'clock, and of course Afternoon Radio at 7 p.m. A lot more to get into, folks. We'll get into it on Sunday. Anyway, let's play a quick mashup. This is Marvin Gaye versus Hall & Oates. We'll see you on Sunday. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks.
Love you. up rising and rising. And when I get that feeling, I won't let go.
Feeling, I won't let you be. When I get this feeling, I won't.